Chapter 11. In the Multan Prison. I did not wish to write anything more about my life story, but since you insist so much, I feel it difficult to disappoint you. I am now writing to you a brief account of the prison life after I was sentenced to life imprisonment. I was not in the least disturbed when life sentence was pronounced. But in the prison cell, when about 7 or 8 people forcibly deprived me of my turban, the kashara, the comb, and the kanga, and my kada, there suddenly fell a terrible darkness before my eyes. Similarly, the aged Baba Ram Singh, who was in the prison cell opposite mine, was forcibly deprived of the 6 symbols of his shastras. When I further came to know that the prisoners in the Eastern Bloc were beaten and maltreated, I was so seriously upset that for the first time in my life, my usual fortitude to abide by the will of God was shaken, and I felt extremely grieved and disillusioned. Fortunately, Payatar Singh, who was in the 3rd cell adjacent to mine, I begged him to recite Gurbani. He was already thinking of doing so. He at once started pouring the ambrosial showers of the soothing hymns. The spiritual power of the inspiring hymns restored the poise of my mind and gave it strength and moral support. Once more the spirit soared high, and tears of love and sorrow rolled down my eyes, and the inscrutable will of God appeared to be sweeter than ever. The fruits which I was given from outside were stopped. I was not allowed to cook my food, nor could I have it prepared by any brother sick, so I had to go and fast. On the 2nd night after the evening prayer, head warden Bahuram brought a basket of fruit which was secretly sent by jailer Nawab Beg. He had sent it specially for me and spent money from his own pocket. He instructed the head warder to give them to me only. I asked the head warder, how could a heartless and callous person like him be so generous? He informed me that in the evening, the jailer, the superintendent, and their staff came to see me. He was also with them. I was sitting in deep meditation. For 15 minutes, the whole staff stood there watching me, but I was not conscious of their presence. I was sitting in deep meditation and in undisturbed samadhi. The staff could not even hear my breathing. On seeing me in such a condition, there was a strange influence on them, and no one ever even dared to call me. Silently, they all went back. On seeing me in this condition, even the stone-hearted jailer was deeply moved, and it is under this spiritual influence he sent a basket of fruit. The head warder expressed the hope that I would accept it. He opened the basket in my presence. I told him that I will have to share it with my brother prisoners, some of whom did not get any food. So I asked them to distribute the fruit to the prisoners and take back what was left. I also asked him to thank jailer Nawab Beg. Unhesitantly, he quietly accepted my suggestion and distributed the fruit to the prisoners and showed me the peeled-off skins of the fruit to convince me that he had given the fruit to them. Only then I accepted my share of the fruit. He carried away all the peeled-off skins from my cell. I asked him not to do such menial service, as he was a Brahman. He replied that he was not a Brahman in deeds, but a great sinner, and a sinner deserved to do such a job. Besides, he took pleasure in doing what I requested him to do. He did not wish to leave any sign of the fruits in the prison cells. This was all I was given to eat during my stay at the Lahore prison. On the 2nd or 3rd day, we were taken out to start our journey to Multan prison. It was at this time I met some brother prisoners. I met by Dilip Singh for the last time here, along with you, Gyani Nar Singh. We sent out for Multan by train. You know very well how we all got together in great joy and love, and how we met Bhai Ram Singh of Gujarwal, Bhai Arjun Singh of Jagraon, and Mai Har Kaur on our arrival at the station. Mai Har Kaur gave me 2 rupees. I gave 1 rupee to my companion, and the other 1 rupee was spent on getting some fruit, which all the prisoners shared, at Multan railway station. You were separated from us at Montgomery station, I remember that painful moment of separation when Baba Ram Singh, Bhai Harbhajan Singh, Bhai Mohinder Singh and others parted from us in tears and sorrow. It was our last meeting and I have not been able to meet you all till now. I distinctly felt at that moment that it was a long separation like the stream parting from the river. But I am convinced that the spiritual union is a real union and we are spiritually never separated. This feeling inspired me with greater bliss and deep feelings of love. Other brother prisoners also felt sad at that moment of our separation. When we reached the Multan station, a generous inspector of police brought fruits with 12 annas and sugar worth 4 annas. Thus, a rupee we saved out of the 2 rupees given by Mai Har Kaur was used for acquiring simple food. We had taken this little food after many days of starvation. Such was perhaps the sweet will of God. Anyway, we got this food just before facing more hardships, trials, and tribulations. Thus, we reached Multan jail. On seeing our bare hands, the Daroga Sada Nand of Multan prisoner became enraged. He immediately gave orders that we should wear caps. I angrily retorted, "Do not dare to force us to wear caps. It is against our faith, and we will not tolerate any such insulting thing. You should not even mention the name of caps to us. There is no power in the world which can compel us to put on caps on our head. We will sacrifice our life, but we will never allow you to put a cap on our head." On hearing this strong roaring resentment, that rascal kept quiet and slipped away, but he was boiling with bitter rage. He at once wrote orders that we should be immediately put to hard labor. We appealed to his sense of humanity, and requested him to give us at least a little rest after such a tiresome journey in chains, and to permit us to take some food. We had taken our bath on the railway station, but Sadanand did not care a straw for any of our appeals, and immediately issued written orders for the hardest labor. In the meanwhile, the medical officer of the prison, Bhai Narayan Das, came there. He was very gentle and a noble person. I told him of the strange order given by jailer Sadanand for hard labor, even without getting our medical inspection. The jailer was not authorized to do so. The medical officer immediately started the medical inspection of the prisoners, and even against his recommendation, the jailer gave orders for hard labor. He himself wrote the order on our tickets, which can still be examined. My weight had fallen from 134 pounds to 108. Over and above this, I went without food for many days. The journey from Lahore to Multan was tiresome and added to physical exhaustion. There was no arrangements for providing food. Under these conditions, I was given 15 seers of wheat to be ground into flour. Although the medical officer had ordered that I should be given rest and food, other prisoners were also given 15 to 18 seers of wheat. Some of us were given the work of pumping water. All the prisoners were thrown into separate dark cells. After this, we did not see each other. I was very weak. I could not even lift a grinding stone. I silently lay there in my cell. Even within the cell, we had to sleep on the floor. For a number of days, no one opened the door, and I was not even permitted to go to the lavatory or take a bath. Jailer Sadanand was an extremely ruthless person. He was a fanatic Arya Samajist, and he considered it a part of his creed to insult and cause injury to my faith and creed. Thirdly, I spoke very strongly to him as soon as I arrived. Fourthly, on the very first day he ordered each prisoner to come to him when he gave his order for hard labor. When my turn came, he said to me, "I hear that you are a son of a very rich man. Your father is a high court judge, and you were also at the Sealdar for some time. You will be able to pass your days in peace if you do something to please me. You can understand what I mean." I at once understood what he meant. I fearlessly told him that it was against the Khalsa Dharm to either take bribe or to give bribe. Both were equally sinful. Secondly, I was not a rich man. I was only a recluse who had renounced everything. Persons like me cannot be forced to do such a thing. I asked him also to seriously consider that we were the political prisoners of the Lahore conspiracy case. to us, joy and suffering were alike. I was already greatly indebted to my dear father for having spent thousands of rupees on my education up to BA, out of which he did not get anything in return. I had been able to do nothing for him. Then again, he spent thousands of rupees on our defense. I would not like to be a burden on him anymore. I would not cause him any more unnecessary trouble. I would endure my troubles and face my difficulties myself. I asked the jailer never to mention such a thing, either to me or to any of my co-prisoners. On hearing this reply, he lost his temper and said to me, "All right, I will see how deep your faith is in Sikhism." These were the reasons why Sadanand made me a special target of physical tortures. For a number of days, I was kept locked up in a dark and murky prison cell. After many days, a man came, and after opening the door, shook me, saying, "Come, you have to appear before the superintendent jail." I was taken before the superintendent, where he said to me, "Why did you not do the work given to you for all these days?" To that I replied, "May I know why did you not make any arrangement for giving me some food or water, or permit me even to take a bath, but insisted only on hard labor? Did I get this hard labor with the permission of the medical officer, or by your own orders? You can see by my physical condition. Can I grind 15 sears of wheat in this physical condition? Is such a severe punishment of hard labor entered in my warrants of sentence? Can these political prisoners, who are given light sentence or transportation, be ever given such hard labor which has been ordered by you? Are you really authorized to do such a thing?" For some minutes the superintendent kept silent. Then he asked for Jailer Sadanand, "Why has he not been given any food all these days?" Jailer Sadanand replied, "Sir, he refused to eat the food which we offered him." The superintendent, in addressing me, said, "Why do you want special arrangement for yourself? This is not your house. This is a prison." I told him, "I'm not worried about any special arrangement. I must be given my food, however simple it is, in accordance with my religious sentiments. Otherwise, I will not accept it." The superintendent replied, "No religion can be practiced in the prison. You will have to eat what you get, otherwise you will be punished." I told him, "My faith and principles are dearer to me than life itself. I will not break my religious principles to save my life. You can do what you like." The superintendent, in addressing his assistant, told him, "Go and throw him into the same prison cell and keep a good watch on him." I was locked up in the cell, and none other than the medical officer and the jailer were permitted to come. The medical officer was a very gentle and God-fearing man whose heart was full of the milk of humanity. He talked to me with sympathy and kindness. I would like to describe my conversation with him in detail, but I will do so at some other time separately. He discussed this issue with me from the religious point of view, and he was convinced that my objections were correct. After this, he did not persuade me to take the food which was offered to me, but started recommending my food according to my needs and wishes. A number of times he told the superintendent that I wanted only simple food, cooked by a Sikh who lived according to the principles of the faith, and I did not seek any special food. This was my vow, and I was determined to keep it. The prison officers did not listen to the advice of the medical officer, but went so far as to say that they did not care if I died of hunger. After that, no one came either to annoy me or to look after me for some days. Only the medical officer came twice a day, and after seeing my pulse, he went away. Whenever he found me in my normal consciousness, he expressed a few words of sympathy also. But when he found me absorbed in deep meditation, he went away silently without disturbing me. When he saw me in my normal consciousness, he asked me various questions about religious practices. He was deeply influenced by these discussions, and spiritual feelings were awakened in him. One or two special guards were always posted at the door of my cell, so no one could express his sympathy to me. Every day the medical officer gave me the assurance that he would not interfere with my avowed principles, but would help me in my own wishes. One day he got a little sago prepared by a so-called Sikh. I was touched by his sympathy and told him that the Sikh who had prepared it did not live according to any of the principles of Sikhism. When he made the inquiry, he found that the Sikh had committed the patit karmas, the fallen deeds, which a Sikh is not supposed to commit. A Sikh ceases to be a Sikh if he does so. The medical officer went away, but his assistant left the boiled sago in my room. The Brahmin who cleaned the room ate it. The Brahmin then reported to the assistant medical officer that I had taken the food. Both the medical officer and his assistant came running to me to express their joy. I was sitting in meditation when he came, but he sat there till my meditation was over. The doctor asked me whether I had taken the food offered to me. I told him that I had not taken anything, and I do not know anything about the plate of sago, which had been eaten away by someone. The medical assistant left it there when the Brahmin was there, and the Brahmin had reported that I had taken it. When the Brahmin was strongly questioned, he said I tried to take it, but could not eat it. Then I asked the Brahmin to give it to the sweeper. When the sweeper was questioned, he also denied that he had taken it. The guard who was posted said that no one except the Brahmin came to my cell. The Brahmin was trapped in his own lies. I begged the medical officer not to punish him. From that day even, the Brahmin who cleaned my room was not permitted to come in my room. Twice the medical officer came to examine me, and after seeing my pulse, went away. My inner spiritual condition was full of peace and bliss. Day after day, I attained sublimer states through meditation. Thus, the 40 days, the fast continued, during which period I did not take even a drop of water. Somehow, the news leaked out that the superintendent had kept me without food for many days, which had resulted in my death. For the first time, the superintendent was seriously worried about my condition and ordered the medical officers to give forced feeding. When the medical officer got these orders, he was seriously upset and came to me with his staff. He told me that he was now duty-bound to send some food inside my body through forced feeding. He sought my forgiveness for being compelled to do so and not to blame him for any untoward consequences. Everything was ready for this forced feeding. I told the medical officer that I would sacrifice my life for my principles, but I would not allow a drop of liquid food to go in my body. The medical officer asked me, "How can you prevent us from force feeding when the authorities have given so many strong men to use force and compel you to eat? I do not wish to practice any cruel method, nor will I use much force. I will send some milk through force feeding into your stomach, and for this I beg your forgiveness." I told him, "I have no bodily strength for any physical struggle with your men, but I will certainly use my spiritual powers to prevent it." The medical officer asked, "How can you do that?" I told him, "When you try to pump milk into my body, I will take my prana shakti, my vital breath, to the 10th seat of consciousness, the dasan dwar, as a result of which my breathing will stop and not a drop of liquid will go into my body. It is only with the help of breathing process that liquid can go in. When that is suspended, nothing will go inside. Even if a drop or two are pushed in, it will not matter much. I am not worried about the risks involved." The medical officer asked me, "Is there any risk or danger in that?" I told him, I would not like to explain it any further, but because you have been very sympathetic and kind, and your generosity has deeply impressed me, I consider it a sin not to tell you the whole truth, and to reveal the secret of the spiritual action. When you try to use physical force, I will withdraw my vital breath and carry it to the transcendent state. As my body is very weak, and my brain, which is the seat of superconsciousness, has also become very sensitive, it is quite possible that in this spiritual struggle against force feeding, my prana shakti may break through the skull and leave my body. I am not worried about the body, nor do I consider such a death to be suicide. My main purpose is to keep my vital breath in superconscious state till you are tired of force feeding, but it is quite possible that it may lead to my death. What I am really worried about is that you may be blamed for killing me. You who have been so kind and sympathetic to me should not be blamed for unwittingly killing your own countrymen. This is the only thought that worries me. For me, there is no other way left to protect my principle except for this one. I will certainly use these spiritual powers. Now I leave the whole matter to you, and I bid you goodbye. On hearing this, the medical officer was seriously upset. He at once ordered his men to take away the instruments of force feeding. He said that he will never use force feeding on me, even if he was removed from his post immediately. He was so deeply moved that he fearlessly gave orders that I should be given fruits. But no one complied with this order. He brought one musk melon for me, which I joyfully took. After this, the medical officer kept me under his own special supervision and regularly brought fruits for me. He wrote 3 pages on my history sheet about my 40 days fast and explained the conditions and religious principles on which I undertook that fast. He also wrote that after testing me 40 days, he gave orders that fruit should be given to me. He also wrote many other good things about me, for which are still on my history sheet. He wrote that he had never seen any man survive without taking food or water for 40 days. I had defied the law of nature and performed almost an impossible feat. It is only through some supernatural powers that I survived without any food or water for 40 days. Thus, he made me some sincerely frank and factually truthful statements about my fast. This noble medical officer struggled very hard to procure my rights for me. Other prison officers did everything to put obstacles in his way. The first thing they did was to refuse to sanction any money for fruits. The medical officer gave orders for providing fruits on medical grounds, but the jailer got the orders cancelled by the superintendent. Now and then, one or two musk melons were brought, which I took with a little salt. Then the medical officer persuaded the superintendent to procure milk for me through a good sick. It was not possible to live on musk melon alone. My weight had filled to 96 pounds. He made arrangement to procure the milk in the following way. He went to the Multan Gurdwara and inquired whether there was a Sikh who lived according to the tenets of Sikhism and who could procure milk and carry it in a clean iron vessel daily to the prison. He also told them my whole story. At last, he was able to get a Sikh who lived according to the Sikh code of conduct, though he confessed that he could not claim to be so orthodox as I was. He lived according to the major tenets of Sikhism, but in matter of discrimination in food, he could not follow such strict rules as adopted by me, but he generally said his prayers before he prepared food. On the whole, he led a fairly well-disciplined Sikh-like life. The medical officer came to me and told me all the things about that Sikh. I readily accepted anything brought by him. I knew the medical officer had investigated properly, and he was telling the truth. And jailer Sadanand, who had great influence on superintendent, once more interfered in the matter and said that no one could enter the prison. The medical officer suggested that I should go to the prison gate and get the milk from the man who brings the milk from the outside. The gatekeeper could prevent me from talking to him. The jailer suggested to the superintendent that some servant of the prison will have to carry the milk from the gate to my cell. The medical officer told them that I will not accept such a thing. The medical officer then asked me whether I would have any objection if he brought the milk vessel in a basket through a sick inmate of the prison. Seeing the affection and good wishes of the medical officer, I agreed. The medical officer was extremely pleased, but the jailer Sadanand again stood in the way and did not allow him to bring milk. I just boiled some sagu in water and took it. Then some roasted gram seeds were also brought. Thus I spent nearly a year and a half in Multan prison on such poor diet. I have no words to express my gratitude to Bhai Iqbal Singh, Bhai Sundar Singh, and Bhai Bakshish Singh, who took extraordinary care of my health. The superintendent was then suddenly transferred. He came to me and told me that I had given a bad name to him and was the cause of his transfer because he had been very unpopular. He had been transferred to a place where he did not wish to go. I asked him how I was responsible for scandalizing him. He said, "Somebody gave out the news that had starved you to death. On hearing this, your relatives came here, but I did not permit them to meet you, because I was seriously annoyed by you, so they had to go back. I replied, so you have got what you deserved. How do you blame me for it? I have not scandalized you, but your crimes and skin have scandalized yourself. You tried your best to kill me by letting me starve. You almost gave me up for dead. By the grace of God, I have survived. The way you have treated my relatives who came to meet me to this far-flung place shows your heartlessness and folly. Even if they had some doubts about my death through tortures, your actions must have convinced them that you have killed me. If you had allowed them to see me, they would at least have known that I am living. But you did not allow the meeting for fear that they may come to know how cruelly I was treated. The next day, he left the prison on transfer. I do not know how far he was telling the truth. It is from him that I came to know that the news of my ill treatment had leaked out to the press. I also did not believe that newspapers could find courage to print such news. During those days, horrible tortures were perpetrated, and the newspapers did not dare to print a word about them. The tortures and cruel treatment which I and my companions had to undergo were so terrible that compared to them, the difficulties which political prisoners of the non-cooperation movement of the Gandhi period are encountering are quite insignificant. At present, the press has little more freedom, and there is considerable political awakening. Even the slightest oppression and cruelty of the prison officials becomes known to the world at large. All the political prisoners of the non-cooperation movement who have come here are surprised to read on my history ticket the record of the tortures I have undergone. The real story of the prison life can be known by copying this history sheet word by word, but it appears that it is not possible. When the new superintendent came, he easily became a victim of the evil influence of Jailer Sadanand. My only sympathizer, the generous and kind medical officer, Dr. Narayan Das, was also transferred earlier. Jailer Sadanand once more started putting me to hard labor and torture. Physically, I was so weak that I could not perform any hard labor, but it was forced on me. It became impossible for me to work beyond my physical strength. As a result of this, I had to undergo one punishment after another. At times, a number of punishments were given simultaneously. In the burning heat of Multan, where temperatures went up to 140 degrees Fahrenheit, I was tied to the trees with crossbar on my feet and hands fettered above. Over and above it, a canvas straitjacket was also put on. Our iron chains and handcuffs became so hot that my arms began to bleed. Blood started dripping from the body and even from the nose. We were left all alone in this condition in the open sun. Not a drop of water was given either to drink or to clean the bleeding nose. As the Sikhs stood, tied to different trees, they sang loudly the hymns of Guru Granth Sahib, and in peace and silence suffered the tortures, accepting it as the will of God. Our only sustenance was the spiritual hymns of Guru Granth Sahib, which gave us unbound moral and spiritual courage to endure those horrible tortures. Those tortures were given continuously for days and months. When nights were cold, we were made to stand with hands up all night in the open and throughout the bitter cold season. At last, the superintendent gave us new punishment. He ordered that we should be flogged, but the new medical officer wrote on my history ticket, health very weak, unfit for flogging. But my companions, by Harnam Singh of Gujarwal, was given 15 whips, and by Hari Singh of Amritsar district, was given 30 whips. The authorities were annoyed when the medical officer refused to allow me to be flogged. They, however, got him transferred. Then a new medical officer, a Muslim, came there. Both the superintendent and Jailer Sadanand approached him to sanction flogging for me. They asked him to allow at least 5 whippings with a cane. All the prisoners in Multan prison were seriously upset when they came to know about it. The new medical officer asked me to meet him in the hospital. When I went there, he said to me, the superintendent has asked me to recommend flogging on your body. I told him, It is good news. They have been waiting for a long time for some medical officer to recommend flogging. They are determined to satisfy this ruthless craving. They are your superior officers. If you do not obey them, they will put you in trouble. As for me, you need not worry. I will accept it as the will of God. It appears my body was made to endure such torture. To this, the medical officer replied, I will certainly never do that. I'm not going to favor anybody. I will only do justice. He then started examining my body very closely. After thorough examination for half an hour, he wrote on the ticket, on the history ticket, heart very weak, unfit for flogging, fit for light work only. At that time, my heart was beating loudly with the rhythm of divine name and its music. The medical officer thought that my heartbeat was abnormal. When the medical officer wrote these words on the history ticket, the superintendent and jailer Sadanand felt terribly crushed. Out of anger, they made me stand in the open sun all day and sometimes all night for another week. The body was now so weak and frail that I was reduced to a skeleton. By the grace of the Guru and by the constant meditation and singing of Gurbani, my spiritual strength and powers were at their highest pitch. Then came winter. Just as it is extremely hot in the hot season, Multan is extremely cold in the cold season. Day and night, biting cold wind was continuously blowing. Now they took away our canvas strait jackets and also our blankets. During the three extremely cold months of November, December, and January, we were made to stand all night with the chains on our hands and feet with no clothes except for a small kasheta and a little head cover. Sometimes we were made to sit all night on the cold floor. The inner warmth of divine songs and the divine name was the only thing in which we merged our mind and soul and spent the most bitterly cold months of the year. Our bodies became numb and lost all physical consciousness. But by the grace of God, we continuously recited and contemplated the Sukhmani Sahib, and the meditation of the divine name continued with unbroken concentration. Thus, in that horrible agony, in that terrible agony, we did not feel the pain. In sorrow, we knew no sorrow. Otherwise, the freezing cold might have ended our life in a few days. This is a brief account of our life in Multan jail, but the real story can be fully studied if my history sheet is copied word for word. I have briefly narrated the few things I remember. From Multan, we went to Hazaribagh. You can know the accounts of our Hazaribagh prison life from Bhai Atar Singh. It is not necessary for me to write them. Whatever happened after he left Hazaribagh, I will write in some other letter. Now I feel tired and exhausted, and all the papers which I had are now exhausted. This is the story of my plight. Over it has fallen the night. It is so hot here that I am sweating as I am writing, and do not know what more to write now. The condition in these prisons is far better than the hellish life I had to lead in the Punjab prison. There is no difficulty here, and there is not much work here. The water in this place is healthier, but the climate of Hazaribagh and its beautiful scenery all around, which was good for spiritual concentration, is missing here. There is, however, much more freedom here. The officers are gentle and generous. That is why we do not feel heat of the climate. We can move about freely, and I am perfectly happy and in blissful condition. It is, however, very hot here, though there has been some rain recently, and the heat is less. Convey my humble greetings to all the friends.